Hoi, 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 cheeky monkey.
Hello and welcome to a Bergkamp Wonderland and Arsenal podcast. Today with me, we have the wonderful and delightful, no Danny, I'm not talking about you, so stop smiling. Dave, Mr. Goonaholic, how are you, Dave?
Oh, I'm all right, Carl, thank you very much. A lot better than I've been in the last few weeks, at least. If I have a sudden coughing fit, I'll mute as fast as I can.
Yeah, don't worry, Danny will edit it out because Danny is the king of editing. Also, with me, there are two of us today. I know, there's two of us on a podcast. The world is going to flip and flip. I understand. Femi, how are you?
How are you doing? All right. Good to be on with you guys.
Femi, you are always welcome. When there's another blackface here, you know, and I'm not talking about the blackface that other people do. You know, we're not talking about Griezmann. You know, we'll move that on. But you all good, though?
I'm good. Good to be on. It's a pleasure. As always.
Thank you. And last, but definitely means least, he's here because he has to be here. Well, really and truly, he does really. Danny, how are you?
Oh, dear. I knew there'd be nothing. Femi was the first person I asked him, and I asked Devon from the USA, and Femi was the first person to say yes, and then you two said yes. So you can't pick me for any favouritism or any trying to clickbaity or any we're trying to meet any quotas. No, you can't point that at me. Not happening.
Yes, you can. But how are you feeling, Danny?
I'm very good. Thanks, Carl. It's nice to have you back.
Good, good. Right, let's crack on and talk about our absolutely brilliant win over Newcastle. So I'm going to go straight to Dave. Dave, give me a summarise of the game and how did you feel about the game?
Decent start, I thought. The sort of first 15 minutes or so, I thought we were pushing it, knocking it around quite well without actually creating anything. Newcastle broke a couple of times, but we looked solid enough defensively. And then, of course, Aaron Ramsey got what looked like the opening goal at the far post. And the decision that I'm sure we'll do in greater detail later on to disallow it whilst in the letter of the law was probably correct when you see what goes on every week in every other game and even every other game that Anthony Taylor referees, you don't see those given. So it kind of put a bit of a blank or a dampener on the early stages. I thought then we had a spell of about a quarter of an hour where we weren't really at the races. Newcastle were looking to hit us on the break, but again, like us, they didn't really create anything. And then just when we needed it, you have to say, the first goal comes along and an absolute peach. It was a bit of an odd 1-2 that was played notionally by Ramsey with Lacazette, but it was really a defender's touch that put it back into his path and he swept it into the far corner. It was what we deserved, I thought, over the whole of the half, but it came a little bit out of the blue when it did. That settled us down. And in the second half, I thought we absolutely ran the thing from start to finish and never looked like conceding a goal. But again, few chances created. Mesut Ozil nearly got on the end of a cross from, was it Maitland-Niles? I think it was Maitland-Niles. Anyway, but when finally the second goal arrived, it was no more than we deserved again. And it was an absolute peach, although it didn't quite go according to the plan. If you looked at the body language, but Lacazette on playing the 1-2 with Aubameyang and that header that went back to him, and then the glorious lob finish. And it was comfortable from there on in. There's another disallowed goal, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later as well, because it's something of a first for me. I've never seen a goal disallowed for handball by the goalkeeper.
Yeah, it's a very comical decision there. Femi, what did you think of the teams, the starting lineups? Explain, do you think that was the right pick for the game, or would you go somewhere else?
No, I think if you look at our starting lineup now, it's pretty settled at the moment. It's quite funny, isn't it? Some managers sort of stumble into starting lineups or formations. for most of the season, when we're playing the three at the back, wing backs, it just didn't seem to work. But it seemed that now that once you've decided that you're going to play Maitland-Niles and Kolasinac, you just have to go with this formation, really, don't you? And they're kind of dictating the formation at the moment, the two of those. And I mean, it makes a difference to seeing. I mean, I was saying to someone at the game yesterday that Lichtsteiner has just totally just disappeared off the map. I thought he was injured. I saw him playing for Switzerland last week. So I think Emery's just is figuring things out as time has gone on. I mean, if you look from the back, there's just standard people that are playing. Mustafi, I mean, once Koscielny's injured, Mustafi's going to play, isn't he? I'll apologize to Monreal, actually, because I thought he was finished at some point during the season, but he has been so excellent. Yesterday he was so brilliant. Socrates, of course, will play. And then, with Xhaka out, Guendouzi stepped in, played his part yesterday as well. I think it was good. Obviously we lost Ramsey as well, which was a bit of a worry when we were only 1-0 up, because then El Neni had to come in, and we haven't seen him a lot this season, so that was a bit of a fright. But all in all, I think it was a good lineup. It's good rotation as well from Mr. Emery, because got a lot of games coming up. So players like Mkhitaryan got a bit of a rest, having played two times in internationals last week, and he seemed to favour the players that he took to Dubai last week, that he worked with, which was really good. So I think we're settling on something quite nice at the moment, aren't we?
We definitely agree with that. So let's go through the game a little bit. So in the first 10 minutes, I reckon we had a lot of possession. We created chances, but we just didn't really, I think, test the goalkeeper a lot. And then I think it was on the 14th minute was when the Ramsey goal was disallowed. Danny, what did you make of that? Did you think that was correctly, I mean, taking the Arsenal hat off, do you think that was correctly disallowed, or would you have allowed that goal?
Well, Sky Sports have got this new thing where they try and, you know, like you see in films, and they, when like James Bond in a 1978 film, and you see him looking for his binoculars or his sniper rifle, and they fog out all around the edges of it. Actually, I can use my hands now because people can see us. They've got this new thing like that, so they can work out the position of the referee and the angle that he saw, and they fog out all the edges. So it's like that, like a U-boat thing where you pop the periscope up and have a look. It's a stupid thing they do. But the point of it was there's no way he could see what was going on. And I was listening to Arscast earlier today, and he was saying that if you look at the linesman puts his flag down, so the linesman didn't see anything, the referee didn't see anything, there was nothing to see. And I think that was a really light if anything, it was a really light touch, or maybe or whatever he called it for. I think it's out of order. But sometimes earlier in the game, if you give a dodgy decision like that, if he wasn't 100% sure, and he's probably thinking, would he give the benefit of the doubt to the defender? And we paid the price for that, but it didn't matter because we still went on and did it. But two dodgy decisions from the referee in one game, so it's just lucky that Newcastle were rubbish.
You're right. And don't we hear that the referees say they'll always give the benefit of the doubt to the attacker? Now, I know that's usually for offside decisions, and you know, I understand that. But for goals like that, you would have thought that they would have given it to Arsenal. I mean, I'm not just talking about Arsenal Hatton, because I think that had another team had scored that goal against us, I would be saying that we are very lucky to have that goal disallowed, just because, just like you, I thought it was really, really soft. Dave, did you see anything wrong with that?
Well, yes, he did. I mean, there's no doubt he does get a little bit of the guy's sleeve. Quite how that is enough to send a 15-stone centre-half crashing to earth, I don't know. And maybe he bought it on when he saw the body on the ground afterward. Like Danny said, I don't think he saw anything of it, and he guessed wrongly, in my view. I've had people argue with me that it was a penalty because it was an offence, and I get that, but we've all seen games, and worse happened last night in both areas where nothing was given. And in fact, the second disallowed goal, if you have a look, as the goalkeeper and Lacazette come together, there is a defender doing exactly the same thing to Lacazette and doesn't get pinged for it. So it was frustrating for me, to say the least. I wasn't alone either.
No, I can imagine, definitely. So we're going through the game, and I think about half an hour into the game, or just before the Ramsey goal, Iwobi gets on the left-hand side and puts a cross in, and I think, like I said, just headers over, which, you know, I think, like I said, it's what, six, sorry, about 5 foot 8, 5 foot 9. He's not the tallest of people, but he gets the header just off target, which is unlucky. And then the Ramsey goal. Femi, do you want to talk me through the Ramsey goal?
Yeah, we had a lot of good moves, especially going down the left side. Iwobi was quite involved quite early on. So I think where they played a 1-2, I think one of the I only watched the analysis on Sky because I was at the game, so I watched a bit of the analysis. And one of the things that they highlighted was when we were moving the ball quicker. And that was one of the instances where there were some times where we were just, you know, moving the ball slow, and it allowed Newcastle to set their position. But if you look at that move, as soon as Guendouzi gets the ball, they just injected a little bit of pace into it. And then Ramsey, that's one thing that he's, I think it's quite funny, isn't it? It's taken Emery almost a whole season to figure out what kind of player Ramsey is, which is he's a midfielder that breaks from midfield into the box, lights the 1-2s. Remember Ramsey's relationship with Giroud that we all loved? And Emery's finally figured out that that's the type. He's not a number 10 who likes the game, you know, behind him kind of thing, or he likes the game ahead of him, that kind of player. So as soon as he got the ball, he played it and he was gone straight away. So like Dave said, it was a lucky deflection that Lacazette, when he was trying to shoot, got, but straight into Ramsey's path. And the finish, I thought it was a really good finish personally, because it was right into poster stamp. I don't know what they call the bottom corner. If the top corner is poster stamp, it was right, you know, hit the post and in. Quality finish from Ramsey. But I think he had a lot of those moments yesterday with a lot of, you know, 1-2s at the edge of the box. As soon as he gets the ball, he just injects a bit of pace into it, which is, I thought it was excellent yesterday, personally.
Agreed. Definitely. Then I think Newcastle, after we scored, Newcastle had they had a little bit of an attacking momentum, because I can remember, I think it was Rondon, I want to say, that sort of Socrates slips over and Rondon breaks into the box and he shoots low. And I think Leno just got down to it. Just have a quick, as I'm talking about Leno, just have a quick talk about him. Danny, do you think Leno has, so far this season, I mean, at the beginning of the season, I thought he wasn't good enough. But do you think he's kind of proved himself lately?
Well, he did. He did that Instagram or tweet or something that said, it's been quite hard for me at the start. I've come from another country to a country I've never been to before. He's played his entire career in Germany. I think he spent most of it all with one club. He battled to get that first team jersey, first spot, the goalkeeper spot from someone. I think he came in partway through one of the seasons, and then last season he had quite a bad season compared to all of his other seasons. So you come to a new country, there's a lot of pressure on you, and you're trying to oust one of probably the all-time top three goalkeepers in Premier League history, because you've got to think Cech is right up there with Schmeichel and Seaman as probably the three of the best, and that's quite daunting. And moving, I don't know if he's got a wife or kids or a family, whether he's moved over here or whether he's just staying in a hotel like Mourinho would do, but that's a hell of a lot of stuff. And for, I mean, he's only what, 25, 26, something like that. That is so much new stuff to do at such a young age, because I mean, although you think, oh, for a footballer, 25 isn't that young, but in life, 25, bloody hell, I wish I was 25. God, I'd have hair and everything. But it's but he tweeted that, and we have seen that immediately. One of the first things we saw was he's so much more mobile than Cech is, and his ability to dive down into the corners. But then the whole thing was getting the defence used to playing the ball out from the back, kind of having a Manuel Neuer the way he does, kicks and gets the ball back, and then we'll pass it out to defenders, and the defenders pass it out. So not only was it hard for him to come and do that, it's hard for the defenders to start learning a different way of football. And then we saw when Cech came back in, that Cech was really struggling to play out from the back as well with our defence. But I think it's a combination of being here for quite a while now, 6-8 months he's been here. The defence has got used to playing out with that kind of freedom. Plus here, I think Emery at first said, right, I want you to get the goalkeeper to get the ball and I want you to pass the ball out. And that was really strict with that. But I think as the season's gone on, we have seen both of our goalkeepers taking longer kicks. and longer passes out like that, rather than passing it, the fullbacks coming in and passing it out to those. So I think he's been magnificent. And then there's been lots of tweets going around comparing him to the how much the Chelsea played for their goalkeeper, whose name is unpronounceable. And I think we've got a better deal there, because arguably he is going to be one that, if he wants to, he can be our number first choice goalkeeper for at least the next six or seven seasons. It's brilliant. I'm really happy with it.
Agreed, and hopefully he does get better and better. I think his shot stopping is really, really good. His reaction saves are, for me, are really up there. I know, like I said, towards the beginning of the season, when he first came in after Cech got injured, you know, we had doubts about him, or I certainly did. But I'm happy to say that he's proved me wrong, and hopefully he does get much, much better. So carrying on for the game, around the 40th minute, I think there was a 1-2 with Kolasinac and I think it was Ramsey, and Kolasinac crosses the ball low into the box and Ozil just misses it. And, you know, I think everyone in the ground probably was also winning him just to get his toe on it, because I think if he got his toe on the end of that ball, we definitely would have scored and gone in 2-0 up. But alas, it wasn't to be. And, you know, we went into the game at halftime 1-0 up. At halftime, Dave, what did you think of the first half? Was you happy with the first half? Do you think we should have got more goals, or was you a bit worried that, you know, Arsenal 1-0 lead, they could possibly come back, Newcastle?
I wasn't worried because of the way we're playing at the moment and the kind of aura that we're giving off. They're looking good. They're playing well. They don't look like conceding, even with a makeshift back three last night. So, got to say now that I thought that Shkodran Mustafi had a much better game generally, apart from, of course, the once where he ballooned the cross into the North Bank and everybody was laughing. Well, everybody in sight was laughing. I can guarantee people sitting around my usual seat were probably not, but that's another story. But yeah, looking at it, I wasn't worried. The only thing that you do think at that stage is that they should be more than one goal to the good. And up until the recent weeks, I would have worried that they might get a goal nicked against them on the break and throw a couple of points away. Not feeling that way at the moment. Didn't feel that way last night. And we went on and finished the job.
Yes, we did. At halftime, I was reasonably happy. I thought to myself, we kind of controlled the first half. Newcastle didn't have that many chances, and I think any chances that Newcastle did have, we kind of snuffed out, because we were, I hate to say this, but defensively good. You know, it's not very often that I can say Arsenal are defensively very, very good, but I think yesterday, we, as bad as Newcastle was, I think we have to say as we were that good as well. Yeah. So into the second half, I think it was kind of back and forth. Newcastle created chances. I think they grew into the game in the second half. I don't know if it was us getting a little bit tired, but, you know, they started creating chances. I can remember Matt Ritchie delivering some very good balls into the box and the strikers sort of not getting onto it. Aubameyang came on for Iwobi. Iwobi's a sore subject. I know, like, in our group, you know, he gets called a whole load of things. Some days he has good games and some days he had bad games. Femi, what do you think of Iwobi? Do you think that he needs to go out on loan? Do you think he needs to stay? Is he a starter? Like, what do you think of him?
This is a tough one. All right, I'm always, I try to be quite honest about players. He's a 50-50 player. For where we are right now, our objective, I think he's good enough, personally. I thought he was good yesterday. The game did change when he came off. I don't know whether it was because Newcastle were growing into the game, like you said, or whether it was just the change in formation didn't really help us. But I thought he controlled the game. But you could see, even yesterday, some of the faults that were with Iwobi, which is, he seems to run with the ball and then just run into blind alleys and either give away the ball or just lose the ball somehow. He's an academy product. That's one thing that I'd always give him the benefit of the doubt. You know, we have to try and support our academy products. And I always say, you know, if we've got players coming through, we've got a lot of wide players coming through in our academy. Wide players are quite frustrating. Now, I don't know whether Iwobi wants to be a wide player or if he sees himself as a number 10. That's the first thing. We're playing him out wide left, and he does a job, but I think he sees himself playing in the middle and controlling the game. Whether he'll do that with Arsenal, I don't know. But I think if we want to go to the next level in the Champions League, then we're going to have to really think about what happens then. But as a squad player, I don't see a problem with keeping players like Iwobi. There's no point in going out and spending 20. I heard someone linking us with a Bournemouth player today, Matt Ritchie. Ritchie, I think his name is. I think, what's the point of going out and spending 15, 20 million on players when you have, you know, good academy players who are decent and can do a decent job? So I think it's no point sending him on loan. You might as well sell him if you're gonna not play him, to be honest with you. If it gets to a point where you think he's not good enough, just sell him and make money off of him. But there's no point in sending these players out on loan anymore, to be honest. It's, what's the point? He's, what, 22, 23? That's mature enough to be starting in most leagues now, to be honest.
No, you make a very valid point. Danny, there was a penalty shout with Lacazette. So the ball come in, Lacazette turned in the box, and I don't know what the person's name was, it really escapes me, but the player came sliding in and it hit his hand. For you, penalty or not?
Well, I'm a gooner, so yeah, I'm biased. It would be. So you want that one where Lacazette pirouetted on the spot and then kind of did a
so over the ball, and then I can't remember the defender's name, but he turned up, but he hit his hand. So do you honestly, heart of hearts, you think that's a penalty?
Well, I don't remember it. I just remember screaming, going, "Oh my God, look at that!" Because imagine if that'd have been goal of the season if that had come off. That was where he did a 1-2 with Ramsey. Ramsey got the second assist, and I think that might have been the goal. But I think the only reason the referee might not have done that is because it all happened so quickly. There's no way a player would have the reactions to put, well, probably no way that a player would have the reaction to quickly put his hand up and block the ball, whether it is blocking it from his face or whether it is deliberately trying to handball it. Situations like that, they can be quite tricky. And I was saying on the show last night that every single situation now, when like that, I look at it and think, well, what would VAR do? You know, like in life, whenever we need to make a life choice, we always think, what would Fife do? I now think, what would VAR do? So I think if it would have been VAR, it could well have been a penalty. But I was just so over the moon with how magnificent Lacazette is.
Yes, I mean, he's come from a feeder league, so he's stepped into the big boys league. So, you know, I'm happy about that. Dave, just a quick yes or no. Penalty for you?
No, definitely not. It was ball to hand, not the other way around.
Okay, and Femi, for you?
I'm going to take a plead the fifth on this. It was down the other end. We sit in the near the clock end. So we just said handball because everyone else said handball in the North Bank. So we just handball.
No. And then there was a couple of substitutions. Ramsey come off at for Elneny. Like Femi said, we haven't seen Elneny for a while. Do you think he might leave in the summer, Dave? Do you think he's going to stay, or do you think he's kind of just biding his time?
I think the signs are that he's probably going to be on his way, because it doesn't look as though Unai Emery fancies him. I'm a little bit disappointed because I actually think there's a footballer in there. And I think as a squad player at the moment, and an improving one, when he was getting regular games, I think he would be an asset. But obviously, Unai has formed a view about the players that he's got. He knows his favourites. One or two have played their way back into contention with him, so giving him a problem. But Elneny, I think, will go, sadly. But they need to free up some wages and some money and a squad place to get new players in.
Definitely, I think it is a squad game at the moment, but I think if Elneny's obviously got aspirations to play first team football, and obviously his Egyptian place is under threat, if he doesn't get regular first team football, so I can see him definitely leaving. There were again a few chances for Newcastle. I can remember them having sort of a shot from wide, and I think Arsenal had a few chances, and then the goal come. I think Danny, talk me through the Lacazette goal, because for me, in our group, I shouted, "What a goal!" because I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
I'm struggling to remember the goal.
So the ball gets played high. Then Aubameyang heads it on to, like I said, runs on. He's got the goalkeeper coming out towards him and he's running alongside the defender. Sticks out a leg, chips it over the goalkeeper's head and scores.
I don't remember the goal at all because a couple of times I had to log in and out of the thing.
So why the hell am I coming to you? Oh, stop talking. Dave, put me through the goal, Dave.
Well, Dave has the same thing that I do. So maybe his one went wonky as well.
No. I've also got the genuine real deal as well. Oh, so I was watching that as well last night. But no, you're right. It was a brilliant little 1-2 between Lacazette and Aubameyang. Lacazette flicked it up. Aubameyang headed it on. The Sky commentary thought that he should have maybe played it more centrally, but Lacazette actually had bent his run anyway, and it was onto it perfectly, in the clear, goalkeeper comes out, and as you described it, it was the perfect chip over him, and there was no chance of them, any chance of them stopping it. So it was absolute pleasure seeing the crowd, obviously, delighted with it. Good to see Lacazette scoring. Good to see Aubameyang assisting, because it's often the other way around.
Yeah, I think their partnership is a thing of beauty. Femi, this season, do you think that their partnership has been sort of key to us getting to where we are in third?
Yes, improving partnership, because it's taken a while to figure out, hasn't it? I remember what there was a game that they was terrible in. Was it Brighton away? Where they played together, and everyone was calling for it all season. And I think we started that game really well and then just absolutely tailed off. I think they complement each other really well, don't they? Lacazette, just strong, runs all day, runs the channels all day. Aubameyang, just always trying to get in behind. And then one thing that you always notice is if one of them scores with an assist from the other, then the other always tries to set up the other man. For the rest of the game. I always noticed that. And I saw some stats about our goals and assists. Lacazette has our most assists and Aubameyang has our most goals, which says a lot, doesn't it, about the two of them. They really complement each other really well. Aubameyang misses a lot of chances, which is quite weird because he scores a lot of goals as well. I heard that he's missed the most chances in the Premier League, like most clear-cut chances of Aubameyang. Two good players, and really, we're really lucky to have them. I think they make a massive difference to the way we play. But like I said, I think we're more rounded as a team, because I think it's all well and good having two strikers, but like I said earlier in the season, we just couldn't work out a formation to get them playing in. But having a good formation and having Mesut Ozil behind them has really made a massive difference as well.
I mean, yeah, when you think of Premiership partnerships, you know, you think of Cole and York, you think of Bergkamp and Henri, you think of Ian Wright and Kevin Campbell, you know, there's loads. And I'm not going to even say that they are up there with the best of them, because for me, you know, going back, I think Cole and York were absolutely phenomenal, you know, in that sort of three, four-year partnership. I think the Manchester United team of 99 for me was...
But they're quite similar to...
Just saying back, the 99 team of Man United was probably the second best Premiership team I think I've ever seen, just behind the Invincibles. But I know you're going to say they're up there, but for me, you know, you've got to have won something, you know, because that's the first thing I would say if someone told me that. But do you think there could be a Colden York, Bergkamp and Henri? I mean, no one's going to compare them.
I think they're more of a Colden York, aren't they? Colin York, you'd never have thought that they could play together, could you? Because there's two just finishers at the time. It was rare to have that kind of combination. It was either you had a what was his name? Niall Quinn and Kevin Phillips type partnership. So little and large. That's usually what the two men up front was made for. And Colin York, I think, changed that dramatically. Bergkamp and Henri was quite different, wasn't it? Because Bergkamp was basically just a number 10. He was more, especially as he got older, he was dropping back. So we were playing more of a 4-1, 4-4-1-1 when Bergkamp was playing. So that was a bit different than a traditional sort of two directly up front. And I think Cole and York were the first two that were two very similar strikers that just clicked. And I think that's more of a comparison, I would say, to Aubameyang and Lacazette. I think they just click. It's good friendship as well, it seems, off the pitch, which seems to really help. There's no sort of jealousy. They celebrate together. You know, they got all these little celebrations that they have. I think that's it's really good, I think.
Yeah, agreed. Dave, in the period that you've been watching football, can you think of partnerships that, you know, like I said, I'm not going to go up, you know, it's only been one season. I'm not going to say they're the best partnership that the world's ever seen, but they're getting there. Do you think that they could become, again, you know, a great partnership and be up there with, like I said, the Colin Yorks and Bergkamp and Henri's and Ian Wright and Kevin Campbell's and things like that?
Yes, indeed I do. And I think they'll be even better next season if Emery finds the wide player he's looking for, because then he can revert. There were a couple of games this season where we played them together as a front two in like a 4-2-2-2. But most of the time he's using Orba as the left-sided player in that 3-2-3-1 setup. I was surprised he didn't play there last night, but I think that the partnership, as you say, anyone who's seen them off the pitch, by the way, you're exactly right about the friendship. They are inseparable. But when I look back and think of all the great pairings that I've seen, they're close to emulating them. And I go back, of course, to the times of Toshack and Keegan, and our very own Radford and Kennedy, who were outstanding. We had another great pairing, Stapleton and Sunderland. But at this stage, I'd say these two are capable. They're not there yet, but they're capable of being one of our best pairings, certainly.
It reminds me a little bit of the back in the right and the bright days at Crystal Palace, because those two were really, really good mates. And it's complete opposite to Andy Cole and Teddy Sheringham at Man United. They were magnificent, but they hated each other. And I think having that handshake thing they do, that's going to go down in Premiership folklore as one of the greatest things. Every photo, every drawing, that is just something you want up on your wall. I mean, I'm buying lots of Arsenal art at the moment. I say lots, I've got like 3 or 4 bits. And that's one I'd love on my wall as well, because it's just typifies the current Arsenal mentality of everybody gets on and everybody's friends with each other. And how often do you see one of your teammates going, hey, look, you're on a hat-trick. I want a hat-trick, you take the penalty because you need to get the goals. And then didn't they return the favour another time? It's just wonderful to see.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, I think the friendship off the pitch is so, so important. I think, you know, when you enjoy each other's company, it's very, very good. And, you know, long may it continue. And I hope, you know, next season that they go on and get so many more goals. So that's the Newcastle game sort of wrapped up in a nutshell, and it brings us above the dirty, dirty lot up the road. So I will stick with you, Danny. Will we get third?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
And Femi, do you think we will get third?
We're making it hard work for you here now.
I'm just, due to prayer pressure, I say yes.
I mean, I honestly do think we do. And if you look at our fixtures, we don't have to play none of the big six as people keep saying, but we do have a few tricky away games, I think. You know, we've got Everton the next game on Sunday, and Everton, you know, they're very hit and miss. You know, they went and beat Chelsea the other day, and, you know, just as easy as they can go and lose to a bottom team. So do you think, I mean, I'm not going to concentrate on the next game, I'm just going to brush over. So we got Everton on Sunday, then we have Napoli at home, then we have Watford away, then we have Napoli away again, then we have Palace at home, Wolves away, Leicester away, Brighton at home, and then Burnley away. So of those games, I'm just going to quickly run down and get you, will we win, lose or draw, just very, very quickly, and I'll go in order of Dave, Danny and Femi. I just want to hear you say win, lose or draw of the next remaining games. So Everton, win, lose or draw?
Danny. Win.
Win.
Oh. Win.
Okay. Napoli, win, lose or draw?
Win.
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 Watford away, win, lose or draw?
Draw.
Win.
Win.
Napoli away. Win, lose or draw?
Draw.
Draw.
Lose.
Oh, Femi, oh, woofy Femi. Damn.
Palace at home.
Win.
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 Wolves away.
Draw.
Tough. Maybe a draw.
Win.
They've just equalised against Man United. It's 1-1.
Oh, God.
I will explain why I said win, if you let me. Win.
All right, we'll go back to it. But Leicester away.
Draw. That's going to be the hardest one, I think, that, and let Wolves.
Win.
Lose.
Oh, Femi, out.
Brighton at home.
I'll win.
We'll murder them.
Win.
And the last game of the season, Burnley away.
I'll win because the season's over. Unless we make the final, then the final's on the 29th of May.
Offside winner in the last minute.
Oh, well, I was just about to say a handball winner in the last minute as well.
So, realistically, most of you have said we're going to win most of our games, and only Femi said we're going to lose maybe two of our games. I personally think our hardest away game that we've got is Wolves away, because they are a very good footballing side, and they're... manager has really got them playing. I mean, they've knocked Man United out of the league, at the FA Cup, sorry, and they're drawing with Man United now. I mean, the game's only half an hour gone. If for some
I don't think our manager's got us playing badly, though, mate.
No, I mean, I'll be very honest with you, and I guess we'll talk about this now. Do you think if we get third that Emre's overachieved, or do you think that he's done what's required of him? Dave, talk about to you.
Well, I'm going to be guided by my pre-season bet when I took Arsenal 25-1 each way, which means they have to finish quite well in a 20-horse race. You have to finish in the first two rather than the first four. I don't know. So I was rather hoping we were going to get second at worst to Manchester City. So I don't think he's underachieved. I think he's done pretty much what I expected.
I know people keep saying give him two or three transfer windows and, you know, we'll see where he takes us. But in this current climate, do you think he's going to be able to have two or three transfer windows just because we really need to get back into the Champions League as soon as possible and just for really financial reasons?
Yeah, I think... Oh, sorry.
Oh, sorry. No, Dave, go ahead, answer.
It makes more sense than I ever will.
I wish. No, I was just going to say, I think he was always going to get two or three transfer windows. I think he would have been forgiven finishing fifth or sixth this season, as he was in a what they would have expected to be a transitional season. It has to a degree. We had a little spell in the middle of the season where we weren't playing well away from home. But generally, I think what we've seen is him making... He makes a point himself of saying we want to progress, we want to get better all the time. Well, he has done that. He's led by example. So I he would have got two or three anyway. I think now he'll get two or three years for sure.
I mean, I have to agree. I think just like my train service for Fifey, where he's definitely overachieving and coming up with very, very good results. Do you think that going forward, if he gets Champions League this season, and let's say next season he doesn't, do you think he will then have to leave, or do you think he'll be looked at as this season will be seen as overachieving, and then next season back as the, if you want to call it, status quo? I'll put that to Danny.
Yes. Well, looking at the whole thing, I think there's only three prime things that could have happened this season. The best thing for us would have been Champions League by winning the Europa League. Second best thing would be Champions League, second, third, fourth. They're all the same for us. And the third option would have been Europa League. And that's the only three things that would have kept him his job. We're never going to win the league. The League Cup and the FA Cup, the club don't care about, because it's Champions League. We've seen Champions League is what we need for the money. So out of those three things, the best also could be finishing second, third, or fourth, and the Europa League. So we're definitely going to get Champions League, and I think that's all the club cared about. They don't care about anything else. You get Champions League, more money for players. Next season, we're going to get more players, keep some players, maybe get some new contracts. The quality of play that we can bring into the club, both financially and attract, because we're in the Champions League, is going to make a whole load of difference, plus the type of football we're playing. And we're going to be able to build and build rather than keep the status quo. So, yes, I'm happy with what he's done. And I said at the beginning of the season, I think we can get third. But then around about before Christmas, I was thinking, oh, bloody hell, maybe Europa League again next season.
Definitely. But what I want to know is, Femi, what makes it more sweeter? The fact that we'll get third and we'll finish above Tottenham after they were apparently in the title race, or the fact that we could possibly be the detriment of Tottenham by not getting to the top four? Because for me, I love it. The fact that they were talking about they were putting pressure and they were in the title race, and now they are, you know, not so far behind us, because they're only 2 points behind us, and anything can change. But are we going to be celebrating St. Tottenham's Day this year, Femi?
I think we will, definitely. I think what the turnaround has been quite I can't believe how quickly they've just fallen apart. But on top of that, we've had really good form. I don't know what's clicked in the club. Something's just clicked. I don't know if it's maybe it's Sven Mislintat leaving. I don't know what's happened. That's the only thing I can think of that's changed. But everything just seems to have clicked at the moment. With Tottenham, I think I don't usually like to concentrate on Tottenham. That's me. I like to see what Arsenal's doing. That's personally what I like to do. And I think one thing that we need to really look at is our away form. If we had a decent away form this season, we would be knocking further up the table, wouldn't we? Because our home form for the last two seasons has been near perfect, to be honest with you. So, but our away form has just been horrific. We're sort of mid-table. Last season, we're lower half of the table. This season, we're mid-table away form. If we can improve that, you can see where we can make up some ground on even Liverpool and Man City. You know, they seem pretty perfect, those two, at the moment. But you can see where we can improve. So I think it's a work in progress. It's the first season after 22 years with a manager. And, you know, one thing that I do hate is the media loving. I mean, this morning I listened to the radio and it was like we didn't play last night. Whereas if we had lost, it would have been sort of, Arsenal this, Arsenal bottlers, and all of this kind of stuff. And it's like this Tottenham obsession with the media. It's so weird. I've never experienced it before.
I mean, it's always been the way. I mean, Danny just put a stat in there. The last six league games, they've lost. They've got 4 points, and we've got 16. But had that have been Arsenal,
there you go.
You know, it would have been like, they're broken cannons all over the place, and all sorts. And you know, then moving to a new stadium, it's not going to get any better. And I know like you said, you don't like concentrating on sort of them, but they're in and around us, so we kind of, they're our main, them, Man United and Chelsea are sort of the main rivals to, you know, the top four position. But you know, if they fall out of the top four, and at the end of the day they don't get the top four, do you think the media would then say that they're bottlers, and do you think they would be calling for Pochettino's head? Do you think even Pochettino, sorry, I'll put it to Dave. Dave, do you think Pochettino's head was sort of swayed by the rumours of him going to Man United? I know, obviously, they've just employed Solskjaer permanently, but do you think his head was turned?
It seemed as though it was, because for a while he was quite getting down on Tottenham, getting down on the fact that he was hinting that he wasn't getting any money to spend, and we all know where that is. And since the United job has gone, since the Real Madrid job has gone, he's reverted to Mr. Nice Man. Everything indicates that he wanted out of there, and that may have a bearing on their future performance.
I mean, a Tottenham collapse for me is a beautiful thing. And I really want to be celebrating St. Tottenham's Day this year. And hopefully we do get to do that. Danny, with Ramsey, I know you're going to cry. And so I can hear Jason crying into his taffy right now. Like, with Ramsey having to leave, well, not having to leave, but he is leaving. So obviously we're going to need a Ramsey replacement. Where else do you think we need to strengthen? Because obviously we need a centre mid for to replace Ramsey, but where else in the squad do you think we're going to buy, or do you think we need to strengthen?
I was listening to Tom and Drew last night on Tom's show, and Drew said to Tom, all right, you can pick one player, one world-class player. Where, what position would you pick him in? And Tom nearly had a breakdown trying to pick the position because it is so hard. And then I thought, if I'd have been asked that on a live show, I don't know what the answer would be. But I thought about it then, in case somebody asks me now, centre-back. It's I think our fullbacks are done. We don't need strikers. We could possibly, my only other option was maybe a left winger, because like Femster was saying earlier with Iwobi, he's such a versatile player. He can play left, right, or in the 10 behind him. He can play in any of those positions because he's right footed, but he plays usually on the left, which is weird. So I would say a centre back. If we could have one world class player, that's the one we need, because it looks like Emery is going to want to be playing three at the back more often than not. And then so we're going to have, I think the first choices are going to be Pappy, Koscielny and Holding. Now Koscielny is probably being in his last season next season. Pappy didn't come to the club to be number one. He's only a £60 million signing. The only one we've got to keep sweet is Holding, because he is going to be a magnificent player. We've got possibly Chambers coming back next season, because he's a really versatile player anywhere, from DM to CD to right back. He can cover all of those positions. So I was thinking what we really need is a really, really experienced captain of his country centre back, and there's been quite a few to be linked to. I think we're not going to get someone of the quality of Umiti of Barcelona. The amount of money he's going to cost us, an amount of wages he would cost. And there's been a few others like Alba, who is I think he's a left back at Bayern Munich. He's another world-class player, but we can't go spending that amount of money on those type of players. So definitely a centre back, but who, I've got no idea who.
No, interesting. Femi, obviously we know we need to replace Ramsey, so let's cut that aside. Where else do you think that we need to strengthen in the summer?
I would say centre back as well. As well, is we need to get rid of players. I think we're going to be surprised at the number of players that might leave this summer to raise funds. So what I'm thinking is they're going to top up some of the positions with youth academy players, to be honest. So I think getting a top class, look at the difference that a top class centre back has made to Liverpool, for example. It's just changed the whole club around. It's literally, they've signed two players. I remember last January there was calls of Klopp, you know, or people wanted Klopp to get sacked because they just were conceding goal after goal after goal. And since Van Dijk has come in, he's settled down the defence. I think you can't pay enough for a top centre-back. I think we've never, ever paid a lot of money for a top centre-back as a club. I can't remember ever paying more than 15, even if that. No, we paid 35 for Mustafi, didn't we? Look how that worked out. But yeah, I think a good, strong, solid centre-back. Pay 40, 50 million if you have to, just get the job done. I think fullbacks, like Danny said, we can make do with what we have. I know Hector's not going to be back for a while, but we can muddle with that position. Maitland-Niles is looking better in that position, and Kolasinac would do it left back. If not, we've got Monreal, because I thought fullback would be one position that we probably at some point need to address as well. Thinking of when Pep Guardiola, one of the first things he did when he came was he got rid of the fullbacks, Clichy and Sanya, our old fullbacks, just bummed them out and spent 50, 60 million on fullbacks and changed the whole team.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. Dave, I'm going to pose a question to you right now, and it's to do with the English quota. So with Ramsey leaving, that's a part of our homegrown leaving, and also Welbeck talking about, you know, he might go, more than like, it's looking like he is going to go. Do you think that what we bring in is going to depend on the homegrown quota?
The simple answer to that is possibly no, and Femi hinted at a potential promotion for one or two of the youngsters who would help fill up the quota or some of the older youngsters. And to just to pop back for a second, we're talking about we have to replace Aaron Ramsey. We don't necessarily have to sign someone. If we buy a quality midfielder for Elneny, we have potentially the answer to Aaron Ramsey already. Emil Smith Rowe. He's going to be some player, I'm pretty sure, unless something goes dramatically wrong with his attitude or his rate of development. I think he's going to be a first-team player, certainly by the season after next, but I think he might well get his chance next year. I hope so.
Holly, don't you think that I got this feeling that he's going to spend the season where he is now? I think that maybe that was the plan because he hasn't played any games. I know he's been injured, but don't you think he's going to stay at loan at Leipzig next season? I got this weird feeling that that might be the plan for him.
It might have been, but I think the Ramsey situation changes that. I really do. I rate him that high. That's bugger all to me. Who am I? But I would definitely have him next season, if only so that he doesn't end up enjoying himself too much in Germany and wanting to stay. That then gives us a real headache.
I mean, yeah, definitely.
Who would you have, Carl?
What position would you think
to replace?
I honestly do think we need to bring in a centre mid. I think that is to replace Aaron Ramsey. And, you know, people can talk about, you know, they don't think Ramsey is important. Ramsey has absolutely, I would say, almost transformed our season. I mean, I think of when he came on in the Spurs game, you know, when we beat them 4-2, 4-1, 4-2, can't remember what the score was. He absolutely changed that game. He came on and he just transformed the home game. And that's what Aaron Ramsey does. And we're never going to get a like-for-like replacement. Just like people say we need to replace Cazorla. You can't get a like-for-like replacement for those sort of players. But we need someone to come in and be that pivotal player in the centre of the park. Because at the moment, yeah, you can talk about Guendouzi. You can talk about Torreira. You can talk about Xhaka. But we don't have an attacking centre mid of those players. You know, you talk about Xhaka, he's a deep line playmaker. Torreira, I would say, is a defensive minded player. And you could talk about Guendouzi, he was more of a box to box, but we don't have, you know, that sort of person who will make them late runs into the box, that person who will go beyond the strikers. And I think that's really important. I think Aaron Ramsey, you know, I'll be honest with you, he hasn't been my favourite player sort of for his Arsenal career, but he's an important player and we need somebody to, even if they can't do what he does, to try and get to what he can do. But just like you, I think centre-back as well. Centre-back is very important. I think Mustafi will definitely leave this season and we need to get a replacement for him. And to the best of my knowledge, there's no youth team players, maybe barring Mavropanos, who's going to be coming through to take his position. So it looks like we might have to buy somebody to replace him. Now, we're going to take a very big loss on Mustafi, I think, because no one in their right mind is going to pay 35 million for Mustafi. It's not going to happen. I think we'd be lucky if we get 15 million for Mustafi. But at the same time, I think Lichtsteiner needs to be replaced. I mean, I think he's getting something like 100k. He is not worth 100k, so we need to replace him. And if not, we do have what's his name again?
Carl Jenkinson.
Yeah, that's the one. No, we do have players that can sort of play right back, but I don't know. I think just like right now, because you do have Bellerin out, I think that if Bellerin goes out again next season or he just comes back and he's not fully right or fully fit, what happens then? Do you know what I mean? So Unai Emery has, he's got a lot of thinking to do on who he's going to replace. But then again, it's all about who's available and if we make Champions League and how much money we've got to spend, because money makes the world go round. And if we don't have the right funds, or you know, it's all about attraction. So that's why I think getting to the Champions League is so important. It really, really is. And I think when we do that, then we'll know, sort of, we can set out how much we've got to spend and who's going to come to us, because just being in the Champions League, you can just attract so many different people, which is absolutely brilliant. So I think we've chewed the fat quite a lot. So I'm going to pass it over to Dave to do Fife's forum.
Which is I've been asked a response to it this week. You'll be surprised to hear. The question was, is it time to get the St. Totteringham's Day decoration down from the loft? And what plans do you have for it? And if I go through the all the answers,
oh, put Kyle in our chat Palmer. Box,
sorry?
If you look in our chat box on the right hand side, I've collated them all and put them all in there.
Dan, you think I can read something that small? But
okay.
Oh, this is interesting then, because I just clicked on the, you know, the hashtag.
They don't always use it because they're shitbags.
Yeah. Oh, that's why then.
Yeah.
So my large number of one response from Kyle Palmer that I can read is pretty much yes. Already looking forward to Arsenal Gent singing his fine tune. And if you can read the others for me, you'd be doing me a big favour.
Okay, I'll read out the rest of the answers. Noir Confidential says, to be honest, I don't consider St. Totteringham's Day to be that big of a deal. For them, finishing above us is a rare occurrence and indeed a cause for celebration, while for us, it should be the normal to finish above that lot. Nicky Wilson says, St. Totteringham Day, ? I'm expecting them to get relegated within 5 years. And Bobby check your booty says, I'm going to put it in front of my mate's house, who is a Spurs fan. And next time we do this, Dave, I'll cut and paste them and tweet them to you and DM them to you, because that would be in bigger writing. I didn't think about that. I can barely read without my glasses either.
Yeah, sorry about that.
It's all right.
No, it's good. So before I get on to your listeners' questions, which Danny is going to do, I just want a quick with a number of prediction where we are going to finish. So Danny, where are we going to finish this season?
Third.
Dave, where are we going to finish
this third. Season? Third.
Femi, where are we going to finish this season? Oh, we've done it. Jason is on mute.
Is he on mute? You know what? There's two mute buttons, and I made a schoolboy error there. I said we're going to finish third.
Okay, and just a follow-up
question. I'll tell you what, Femi, everybody out there watching this is going to be surprised it wasn't me, because usually when we do the radio show or whatever, it is always me.
So a quick follow-up question. We finish third. Who finishes fourth? Chelsea, Man United, or that lot? Femi.
That lot.
Dave.
Manchester United.
I agree with Dave, definitely.
Have you looked at the fixtures?
Don't care. I want them locked.
The problem for Man United is they've got to play Man City and Chelsea. That's the major problem why, and that's the only issue I see for them.
Mm, Tottenham have got to play Manchester City.
Yeah, but that's it. They've got no one else. And they've got 5 out of 7 home games. I don't know how the Premier League worked out the fixtures this year. It's really, but it's a bit dodgy, isn't it? How they've got so many home games left.
But at a stadium where they are not used to playing any more than the visitors are. So the visitors will go there with confidence. Tottenham have only got to start badly a handful of games there, which is all they've got left. The crowd suddenly isn't the advantage that they want, because they're no different in many ways to how we were when we were coming towards the end of the Wenger period. They will turn as quick as anything if they see the top four sailing away from them.
I would prefer Chelsea to get it, because at least they can't buy any players and they can crash out of the Champions League. If Man United get Champions League, imagine how much money they're going to spend in the summer.
Yeah.
Carl, Femi's doing the listeners' questions. Can you see them in the chat box, Femi?
I can.
Top left-hand corner, blue thing. And then
yes, I'm trying to work out where to start from.
When Carl gives you the nod, the first one's Mike Hanneman's one.
Yep, got it.
Go ahead, Femi. Go on in, Carl. Start listeners' questions. Go ahead.
Okay, we're going to go to listeners' questions. So the first question comes from Mike Hanneman, and I'm going to ask Carl this question. Says, is Ramsey continuing to perform as well he is because A, he genuinely wants to the club to succeed and go out on a high, or B, his future has been settled and he knows where he is going to play his football, or C, he wants to prove we were wrong to withdraw his contract offer and let him go, or a mix of all three?
Definitely all three. I have to definitely say that. I mean, Aaron Ramsey does like Arsenal, you know, and I think that if we didn't withdraw the contract offer, he'd be staying. I genuinely think he would. And, you know, there's no one knows what really happened, you know, whether he was asking for too much money, whether his agents, you know, who knows, whether Emery didn't like him. The only people that will know was Emery, his agent, and Ramsey himself. We don't really know. And I think he's settled. He doesn't have to worry. He knows he's going to go and play in Juventus, and, you know, whether he'll start, but he's going to play with an absolutely brilliant team. He's going to play with one of the top two players in world football. It's a brand new league for him. It's a new life. So, you know, he's comfortable. And I do think he wants to prove to everyone to say, you know, look what you've lost. You know, if you look at, do you remember the Fulham game where he scored that absolutely brilliant goal, and his celebration, literally where he just lifted his hands up and was literally saying to the crowd, look, this is me, you know. So I'm unhappy, you know, that we're losing him. Not as happy as Jason is, because Jason's distraught. Like, I genuinely think we're going to need to go and hug Jason sort of the day that his contract ends, because Jason's going to be an absolute mess. It's going to be a wreck. But yeah, I'm unhappy that we're losing him. And I truly think that, you know, he's just playing his football, and this is just proving what he can do.
Good answer, I think. Yeah, Ramsey's just, I mean, we've got to remember he's been at Arsenal for 10 years now, so he is kind of ingrained in the furniture of the club, in the fabric of the club. He's a man that wants to do well for the club. Okay, so the next question is from Noir Confidential. I'm gonna go to Danny for this one, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Says, for some reason, I always think Lascelles' first name is Giovanni. Is there a player whose name you constantly get wrong? And he actually says, don't give the questions to Danny, because the episode will be 4 hours long. But
every single player ever in the world football, Danny gets the name wrong.
But I always enjoyed Danny messing up some names. So give us a couple, Danny, just two.
There's none. Don't know what you're talking about. Don't bully me. It's not fair. Noir Confidential, you know what he's doing there by putting that at the end. Chupa Apcom.
Akpom.
Okay. Apparently, he's playing in Greece now, and the team he's playing for are looking like they're going to win the league undefeated.
Isn't he the top scorer as well?
I think he's got 5 in 17 or something like that. I saw a tweet about it and forgot to go and look it up, but good luck to the lad. I'm really glad that he's doing well over there. You have a young player who's come from the academy who's gone away and applying his trade somewhere nice and warm, unlike here. I can't think of any other ones that I used to get wrong, but I'm the same thing with teams. Valencia, Sevilla, I get both of those mixed up because they look the same. Fiorentina and Sampdoria, they're both kind of bluey, purpley colour. And so many things. And it's like whenever someone says, what things do you like? I always go astrology. No, fucking not astrology. That's bullshit. That's made up astronomy. That's what I like. My brain, once it's in there, ruined.
What about Pegasuelo? You can't say that either, can you?
Mr. Unpronounceable, I can say that perfectly. Julio Unpronounceable. And you've got another couple of unpronounceables at Chelsea, that they're everywhere. Remember all the trouble we had when Ozil signed? We spent an entire podcast trying to... Is it Ozil, Otzil, Ozil, Ozil? It's yeah. Not good. So sorry, people.
That's good. Danny didn't take 4 hours, so there you go, Newell. Should be happy with that answer.
We've seen on the podcast, so it won't be 4 hours.
All right, the next question is, it's quite a serious one, and having two black people here, I'm going to go to Mr. Hollick for this one, actually. It says, why aren't there more black managers in the Premier League getting a chance? Let me rephrase it, because I think he's I know what he's getting at, but let me rephrase it. Why are there not more black managers in the Premier League?
I've just completely spoken.
I don't think it's just a Premier League issue, is it?
No.
I think it applies throughout the Football League. You've not had one yet who has been overly successful at any level, but that is no reason for not selecting your future managers and coaches by colour alone. It's obviously absurd because you've got a great number of great players and good players who have ploughed their trade down the years. And I think the most ridiculous thing of all was West Brom getting rid of Darren Brown when they were in fourth place in the league and in with a chance of going up. And it didn't strike right at all. But I do think that you need one or two to come through and be that success. And I hope that one of them is going to be a bloke who I never thought was going to be a success. Sol Campbell at Macclesfield could keep up arguably the worst team in the country. I wish him every success. And if he does and gets a chance to bring in a few more players in the summer that he can shop around for, then that he might be one. But yeah, I think that's the that's one reason. I know there's an obvious second reason, but I'm sure that was what he wanted to get out of it.
Yeah. I'll just quickly go to Carl on that one, just for a quick, answer on that one. It's quite a good question.
I think in all walks of life, I'm not going to carpenter this up. I'm just going to do it quickly. I think in all walks of life, Black people are not really given chances in the workplaces. I mean, I work for London Underground, and London is the most diverse city in the world, I think, and I think it's the greatest city in the world. But I sit with all the senior managers in London Underground, and of all the senior, we have a conference call every morning at 8:30. We have a conference call in London Underground, and of all the senior managers, there's probably two out of about, I would say, about 15 that are Black. There's probably, I think, four that are women, and it's not to say that I look at that because every morning they come into my office and we have a conference call and I look at it and I think that's not representative of London. It's not, like I said, London is the most diverse city in the world, and I don't like when people use colour to say the reason why they didn't get a job. I would say I'm quite high up in London Underground, but I didn't get the job because I'm Black, and I won't get another job because I'm not Black. It's all dependent. But I do think that in all walks of life, there is a glass ceiling. And I think in football, there is a glass ceiling that, you get to a certain level and people are not given chances. And unfortunately, sometimes you do wonder why people are not given a chance. Is it because they're Black? And I've applied for jobs before, and if I haven't got them, I do think to myself, and this is Femi can sort of maybe agree with me, in the back of your mind you do think, did I not get a job because I'm Black? And it's unfortunate because there are jobs that you apply for, you think I would be perfect for that and I'll absolutely do so well in that job, but you don't get the job. And in the back of your mind you do think it. And sometimes I look at, like Dave said, I wish Sol Campbell every success in the world. I really, really do. And I hope he does well. But I'm going to give you a handful of managers that Black managers in the Premier League. I mean, we had Paul Ince at Blackburn, and he, for me, was atrocious. He was really, really bad. He was given a chance. He didn't do very well. We've had Chris Hughton, who's had quite a few number of jobs, and he's done well at some jobs and he hasn't done well at some others. I think John Tigenaar at Fulham, he was okay, wasn't he, to a certain point, and then he sort of fell off. But that's just at the top of my head that I can think of Black managers. And then, like I said, Darren Brown at West Brom, for me, was the most ridiculous sacking in the world.
Darren Brown's hypnotised you to say that every time.
But yeah, I think that is the most ridiculous sacking I think I've ever heard of. He's fourth and there's in the play chance of being in the playoffs and getting there, and they sack him for some unknown strange reason, and we don't know the reason why. Everyone's speculating because he's Black, and I would hope and I pray that it's not, they didn't sack him because he's Black. I think that's very, very stupid for them to do that. But in the back of your mind you're thinking, would a white manager get sacked if they were in fourth in any league in the world? It's very highly unlikely.
Yeah, there you go. I think one of the things, just before we move on that, is jobs for boys. There's a lot of jobs for boys in football, isn't there? Steve McClaren just got sacked again. How many jobs has he had? How many chances has he had? I heard Sam Allardyce on the radio this morning pitching himself around for jobs. How many jobs has he had, you know? It's time to give some fresh people a chance. There's some guys that are coaching that are, you know, doing well. And talking about that as well, I'll quickly move on to this question. Another one from New York Confidential, and I'll ask Danny this because he keeps up with the unders quite a lot. Says everyone's focused on the job that Emery is doing, but what are your thoughts on Freddie Ljungberg's first season in charge of the under 23s, and what are your expectations regarding his coaching career?
Well, he's been we had a dodgy time with the under 23s because when we had the injuries, we had so many injuries this season. Loads of our under 23s were taken to the first team, and then that meant the under 18s were struggling as well because the under 18s were there. Everyone was being shifted up one position. So currently in the under 23s, we're sixth in the league, 28 points, 10 points behind the leaders Everton, who are kind of running away with it at the moment. But it's been a case of Europa. Next season, we won't see this as much. Somebody mentioned it on the radio show, the live show last night, that next season there won't be, you won't be playing, we don't do qualifiers anymore in the Champions League. And the group stages of the Europa League, all of us could have got a game against some of them teams. They're rubbish. So that's when the under 23s were getting games. It's valuable experience. But next season, we're going to be seeing more of those players going out alone to get that experience because they're not going to get it in the Champions League. Probably not, unless we get one really bad team. But very rarely do you get terrible teams in the Champions League group stages anymore. And the only opportunity they're going to get is the League Cup and maybe the early rounds of the FA Cup. But that could be one game in each. And then the player's gone. That's a season wasted. But Freddie, as a manager, he's really good. He's very attacking-minded players. We've got like John Jules from the Ministry of Sound Party. You've got Balogun, who's going to be coming up. He's only 17, 18 at the moment. We've got some really, really good strikers. And we've got there's a decent mix of younger players that have come up and other players that have been there for a while. The only problem I think that he has got is in defence. We've got Iliev, the Macedonian. I think he's 24, 25, something like that now. He's not going to make the first team. And other than that, the rest of the goalkeepers we've got there are all children. They're all teenagers. There's going to be quite a few of the players going, like Cohen Bramwell's going to be leaving, and Julio's got to be about 23 now. Julio, unpronounceable. He's not really made
it.
He's not made it into the first team. But we have got so many young English players coming through now, and Freddie is making the most of all of those. I'm just looking at it now. We've got Medley, Amoli, Osei Tutu, Thompson, another really good one. Balogun, that I've already said. Clark, we've got Gilmore, who's English but plays for Scotland. Maitland-Niles, Saka, Ben Sheaf, Ole Inca, and Willock the Younger, and Amici. All these, it's just like the old days back when I was growing up watching football, and Nketiah and John Jules up front. When I was growing up, in the times of like Adams and Merson and Thomas, Caesar, Rocast, all that lot, all young English players, all coming through the system together. And we've got that now. We have got one of the best youth systems at under 18 and under 23 that I can remember having in years. It wasn't that long ago that our under 23s, which were, they changed it. It used to be under 21, so we're playing in the second tier of the reserve team football, and now we're fighting for mid-table. And next season, I think they're all going to get more games because they won't be nicked by the first team so much. I think Freddie's doing a really good job there, and hopefully he won't bugger off again, because he went to Wolfsburg with the ex-head of the academy there, and then he's come back again. But it's just really exciting times. Just go and have a look at them, try and follow people like George Bird, spelled with a J, J-E-O-R-G-E, Bird on Twitter. Go and follow him, and he keeps you all up to date, and he's got his website about it. And Tim Stillman, that's another really good one to keep an eye on. And they report the ladies and the youths, and really exciting time now. And some of these players are already making their way through to the first team, and I'm really excited. So, yeah, that's a five-hour answer to a 30-second question.
I think you guys call that carpentering it, don't you?
My next answer is going to be yes or no. So be careful.
Yes, I'm going to do a couple of quick-fire ones, okay? So we'll go to everyone on this. Just one-word answers. This is from Trenry. Says, if you had to sell one of our high earners to free up transfer funds, who would it be? You don't need to give us a reason. Just quick one-word answers. Go to Mr. Holick first.
Lick Steiner.
And Carl?
Exactly the same, Lichtsteiner.
And Danny.
This is hard, isn't it? Well, he's going anyway. I'm trying to think of Mkhitaryan.
One word answers.
Mkhitaryan, multi-syllable.
Mickey, okay.
How about you, Femi? Who would you have?
I'll tell Mustafi straight away. Not even, I wouldn't have to think about it. Okay, we'll do another quick fire one. This is from Carl Palmer. Says, who has been this season's unsung hero? Says, for him, it has been Azley Maitland-Niles, who after a slow slot is establishing himself at right back and helping to cover Hector. So we'll go to Mr. Hollick once again for this one.
Holding.
Wonderful. And Carl?
Leno.
Leno. And Danny?
Iwobi.
Fuck's sake.
Wow, Oi. That's a controversial one, isn't it?
He's played more games than any other player for us all season. 41 games, all competitions.
Doesn't mean he's been good, does it?
He has been bloody good. You shush your nonsense. Well, how would you have for me?
Unsung heroes. I will go Matteo Guendouzi. Yes. Not sometimes based on performances, but from nothing. He came from nothing, basically. We didn't even expect him to play this season. And that's he's got quite a lot of minutes, in like fourth amount of minutes for us. So, yeah, he's kept on any out of the team, basically. Okay, we'll go.
I said to Carl that where he's 41 games, 5 goals, 7 assists. You don't think that's a good season?
I'm going to say two words to you. Manchester City.
What are you going to say? Fuck Ellis.
I mean, that's coming. But I'm sorry. Like, I understand what you're saying, but for me, that Man City could not be forgiven. That was atrocious. And, you know, and I'm not going to base his whole season on one mistake. That would be ridiculous of me, but 41 games, 5 goals. No, that's not good enough. For an attacking winger, no. He should minimum of 10.
All right, give him time. Patrick, so he's done.
Welby's actually got 3 league goals, which is less than Granit Xhaka. Bit poor there. Okay, so final question is from another one from Trenry. And I'll ask Carl this one. Should we be looking at Alderweireld with his supposed 25 million clause?
Ooh. 25 million for a defender is quite cheap these days. And, you know, it was great when we took their captain. I don't think he'll come to us. I think he's got Manchester United written all over him. And I think that deal was probably, if not already done, then halfway done already. So as much as it would be nice to get him, because I think he's a very good defender, he's going to Manchester United, I think.
Yeah, and I hate to burst Trenry's bubble, but I've heard that some clubs put anti-Arsenal clauses in their contracts. And that's not even a joke.
Liverpool do that for Firmino.
And I think Tottenham do that with their players as well. So when these weird contract stuff comes up, Arsenal would have to pay a lot more than that, basically. Mr. Hollick,
have you
heard of that before?
No, I haven't. Yeah. In all
honesty,
Liverpool
definitely do that. Wouldn't, with their players to Arsenal.
I don't think it's going to hold legally. I don't think it's going to hold legally because it's restraint of trade. In all honesty. But the point I was going to make was, unless I'm hallucinating, I thought I read somewhere earlier in the season that he'd actually renewed so that they could take the cost price out of it, the selling price out of it. Or am I dreaming that?
No, he didn't renew. They triggered an automatic renewal in his contract.
One-year extension.
Otherwise, he would have left on a free. Okay. And then with that one-year extension, the release became 25 million for him to leave.
Okay.
I think they're going to have a few players like that this summer because I'm sure Eriksen hasn't signed a contract as well. So he will be off this summer as well.
Well, they need to pay for that new stadium. So there's going to be players that are definitely going to leave. I think the one player they'll try and hold is Kane, because obviously, you know, I know Chris ain't going to want to hear this, but the guy is good. You know, he is, and he's easily going to be 100 million somewhere. Some stupid club, only like someone like Real Madrid, would pay 100 mil for him. They're going to have to really start selling players, because that stadium was way, way over budget. I mean, hopefully Steve can get on soon and Steve can probably detail it more. But, you know, I think they paid something stupid like £600 million more than they originally thought. And that is just, there's no way they can sustain that.
Yeah, wonderful. Those are the listeners' questions. Thanks, everyone, for your questions once again. And hand over back to Carl.
Yes, all it's time for is shout-outs. I know, I'm going to say shout-outs because Danny likes to say gentleman's nod. No, Danny, it's a flipping shout-out. So I'm going to go to Dave for his first shout-out. So, Dave, who are you giving your shout-out to? Dave?
Can you come back to me in 30 seconds?
All right. Danny, who's your shout-out to?
I was biting my fingers. How dare you? Right, it's going to go to the people who were lovely enough to donate to the on during the live show. It's the Yvonne, Unique, Michael Harneyman, not Hanneyman as I've been calling him, Jim Howson, Sean Murch, Tierno Barry, I think he's part Welsh, and Brent Bloomberg. So thank you very much to all you wonderful people for donating. Thank you very much.
Yes, guys, much appreciated. Thank you for donating. I'm going to go to Femi. Who's your shout out to?
I'll just go to the person who talks Arsenal and Walking Dead to me most, my two favorite things. It's at True Toil. That's at TRUETOILE. Truly, good for talking about Arsenal. Gets up early to watch the games as well. So give her a follow.
Thank you. Dave, are you ready for your shout out?
Yeah. Found him at last. Sorry, there's a chap who was just I got in touch with in the last sort of 10 days, and we've quickly established a rapport over email and DMs and all that sort of stuff. So I'd just like to give a shout out to Mark Earl on Twitter, who is at MA Earl. Real nice guy. Go and have a look.
Ah, that's good. My shout out's going to be to Mike Riley. He's just sent off Ashley Young. Sorry, Mike Dean. Mike Riley? What am I getting that from? He's just sent off Ashley Young.
That's Mike Dean's 100th red card, isn't he? Did he celebrate?
He probably should have, but yes, Man United down. No, my shout out's going to be to two well-known people on ABW, Akib and also hashtag fuck Ellis, that's Ellis Mel, because for some unknown reason, Akib doesn't like Game of Thrones. Like, what weird person doesn't like Game of Thrones?
Oh, wrong.
Piss off you. And he doesn't like Marvel's films either. Like, he doesn't like Marvel's films. Like, what? So, and me and Ellis have been bullying Akib to tell him that he's tasty in TV programs are less than adequate. So shout out to Akib and Ellis, and as always, everyone, please, please, please tweet Ellis, hashtag fuck Ellis. Everyone just needs to do it. We need to get it trending again. But yes, hashtag fuck Ellis. And on that note, I am going to wrap up this show because we have talked Arsenal out. So Femi, I want to say much appreciated. Thank you for being on.
Thanks for having me, guys. Really, really good to be on. Really enjoy the show and hope to come back on again soon.
Oh, Femi, touch my heart. And it's nice to see another face like mine because they're not like me. They don't like me. Dave, the gentleman of the ABW, I absolutely love being on with you because you're just a gentleman. I remember when I first met Dave. I'm going to tell a story. The first time I met Dave, I'm not just saying this, I was in awe of him. We went to an Arsenal game with all the ABW boys, and we was in the pub. And I remember Chris, and I was also with Jason, and he was like, oh, there's Dave. And I think I almost pushed Chris out of the way so I could shake Dave's hand. Like, I was like, oh, it's Dave. Like, so Dave, being on with you is always a pleasure. It really is. I'm being serious.
Oh, thank you very much for those kind words. I'm welling up here. No, it's been a great fun and good to work with Femi as well for the first time. Well done, Femi. I hope you come back soon too. Absolutely great.
Oh, you're a legend, Mr. Hollett. You're a legend.
Definitely is. And Daniel, you have nice. Been here. Oh, we love you, Daniel. I mean, the first thing Daniel does is check. I mean, I think what Daniel does for this podcast is absolutely brilliant. He's up editing and tweeting, and you know, I can't thank you enough for sort of what you're doing. I think all the ABW boys love it, and you're sort of the reason why, you know, ABW is here. So I want to thank you as well.
And if you lot want, I'll be doing it to myself, and then it'll just be cats and bowel movements for every show.
Lovely.
Cheers for hosting, Carl.
No worries at all. So, guys, I want to say thank you. As always, tweet us anything you want to hear, anything you want to see, and I will see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Hashtag Quack Alice.